You may be seated. Our last case this morning is 2016-261, Disciplinary Counsel versus Benjamin Jolton. For the relator, Ms. Russo.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice and distinguished justices of this court. My name is Casey Russo, and I represent the relator, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, in this matter. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. If this court follows the board's recommended sanction in this case, it sends a message that you can commit a myriad of rule violations, including stealing money from your client, failing to disclose that you stole money from your client, failing to promptly refund unearned fees, neglecting a client, failing to communicate with a client, failing to provide settlement funds to an interested third party, commingling personal and client funds, completely mismanage your IOLTA account for a period of over 6 years, and fail to cooperate with the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in their investigation over 2 years, including failing to appear at 2 depositions and failing to respond to 14 letters asking for information, and only receive 6 months of an actual suspension. That's not a slippery slope that this court wants to go down. There are 4 reasons why this court should reject the board's recommended sanction and impose an actual 2-year suspension in this case. Number one, precedent case law states that the misappropriation of client funds, the presumptive sanction is disbarment, but that sanction can be tempered with significant mitigation. Number two, the panel erroneously relied on Disciplinary Counsel versus Coleman in this matter in making its sanction recommendation. Number three, the respondent lied to the panel during the hearing and should not get the benefit of a state suspension. And number four, the respondent's testimony demonstrates that monitoring him will be ineffective. This court has consistently stated that the baseline sanction for the misappropriation of client funds is disbarment, but that sanction can be tempered with significant mitigation. Significant mitigation is what this case is lacking. In mitigation, it was stipulated that respondent had no prior disciplinary history, as well as evidence of good character and reputation. It was also stipulated that he gave a full and free disclosure to the board, as well as made a good faith effort to make restitution. However, those two mitigating factors were correctly given little weight by the board and the panel in this case.
Counsel, do you think that the 17 letters that were given in support were unduly emphasized by the board?
I do. I think that they do have mitigating weight, but I think that the mitigation is not significant enough in this case. I don't dispute that he might have a good character and reputation in the community for practicing law. However, his mitigation that was presented is not significant enough. The panel also found that he was remorseful during his testimony, stating that he freely acknowledged the wrongfulness of his conduct. However, throughout his testimony, the respondent truly fails to accept responsibility for his actions, and instead he gives excuses for his misconduct, which demonstrates why a lengthier suspension is appropriate in this case. He denied stealing money from Ms. Torok. He says that he borrowed it. When we borrow something, particularly from a client, there is generally, and has to be complied with Rule 1.8, disclosure that you have borrowed something from that client and you've created this business relationship. In this case, there was no such conversation, and in fact, Mr. Jolton has never admitted that he actually stole her money. He blames his violations on office mismanagement. He wrote himself a check for $4,000 within 6 days of receiving an $18,000 check from Ms. Torok with the subject line of Torok. This was well over the agreed upon and stipulated flat fee of $3,000 for the handling
counsel,
of the entire case.
I'm over here. That did catch my attention here, and I saw it in a footnote. I'm not sure, what was the purpose of the $18,000 going into the trust account?
Ms. Torok gave the respondent $18,000 to hold in trust, with the understanding that $3,000 of that money, actually at the beginning, I'm sorry, it was $2,500, was the agreed upon initial flat fee, and it was later increased to $3,000, with the understanding that that $3,000 would go towards his fees, and then she would have available to her the remaining $15,000 when she requested
it. How is that not concealment of an asset during a domestic action?
She actually withdrew the money prior to the divorce being even filed, and there's no evidence that she was giving the money to the respondent for some nefarious reason. And the opposing counsel was also aware of these funds.
I understand that, but I'm having difficulty understanding giving your lawyer $18,000 and the agreement is your fee is going to be somewhere between $2,500 and $3,500. What's the purpose of giving lawyers money?
In this case, Ms. Torok asked him to hold the funds so that he would disperse them at her request, thinking that those monies would be safe in his IOLTA account. And unfortunately, in this case, that wasn't the case. Within 6 weeks of Ms. Torok giving respondent those funds, he had stolen over $13,000 of that money. And then when he wrote her a check for the $15,000, she did wait to cash it. But however, when that check bounced, he didn't tell her that he had stolen her money. Instead, he told her there was a restraining order on the money, which might have been accurate. But if there's a restraining order on the money, then he then wrote her two piecemeal checks to cover her expenses when she needed them. So either there's a restraining order on the money, or he's also in violation of a court order for then writing her these piecemeal checks in violation of the restraining order.
Not to belabor it, I'm trying to look at a legal reason for that money to be in his IOLTA account.
Technically, they were client funds, which would then be deposited into his IOLTA account.
Can a client just go up to their lawyer tomorrow and say, here, would you hold this $50,000 for me?
I think in certain circumstances, I don't know, to be honest with you. There was no evidence that these monies were being given to respondent to hold as hiding assets. There was no evidence of that, and Mr. Jolton didn't believe that that was the case either, or I don't believe he would have actually taken those monies into his IOLTA account to begin with. I think he was doing his client a favor by holding these monies so that she would have access to them if she needed them for expenses.
So what are you're asking of this court?
I'm asking for this court to not stay any portion of his suspension and instead give him the entire 2-year actual suspension. He also failed to provide a reasonable answer to the panel regarding the $88,000 personal monies that he deposited into his IOLTA account. He at first testified that these monies were from an inheritance, but after being pressed by one of the panel members who had an extensive history in probate law, he admitted that these fees were an executor fee. When one comes into $88,000, we expect that they know the source of those funds. And I submit that he did know the source of those funds, and he was trying to hide those assets in his IOLTA account. At least it appears as though he was trying to hide those assets in his IOLTA account.
From what?
He was going through a divorce. The respondent was going through a divorce in this matter.
So is it established that he was hiding this from his spouse?
It was not established at the hearing. However, it appears
Why are you coming here and suggesting that?
That's what it appears as though. Why else would you deposit an $88,000 inheritance? I'm sorry, an executor fee.
Did the panel conclude that?
They did not, Your Honor. They stated that the source of those monies, they were troubled by the fact that the respondent didn't have a good answer regarding why those monies were deposited into his account. And it wasn't fleshed out completely at the hearing, but he did admit that it was an executor fee. And
so they're troubled and you come here and tell us while he was hiding it from his spouse.
I said it appears as though he's hiding it from their spouse.
Is there any testimony at all about a divorce?
Yes, there was extensive testimony regarding his divorce.
Okay, and what was that?
He stated that he didn't have any other accounts. He only had his business and his IOLTA account. He had no other private accounts. He couldn't give an explanation as to where he would actually deposit, let's say, a check for earned fees other than his IOLTA account. I don't know if he was using his business account at the time, but he was effectively using his IOLTA account as his personal checking account.
So he never removed even if there were fees that rightfully went to him, he didn't take them out of the IOLTA account. He just used the IOLTA account as though it were, for at least that portion of the dollars, as his personal checking.
Correct. But he also used Ms. Torok's money, because we know that when he deposited those monies within 6 weeks, there was a balance that was less than what could have covered the remaining portion of her money.
Okay, but getting back to, I want to make sure that you didn't unfairly give us information about his domestic relations problems. That was part of the testimony.
There was extensive testimony regarding the personal issues that were going on in respondent's life during the hearing. The respondent did during the hearing.
As mitigation.
During his case and during his direct examination. I don't know
was
if it
was for any other reason other than mitigation. Look at what a tough time I'm having.
I can't imagine that it was for any other reason other than that, but that wasn't specifically stated.
All right.
This respondent also made last-minute attempts to try to thinly veil his mitigation. He waited until December 1st to go to OLAP. He waited until December 7th to pay back restitution and to secure a mentor.
I'm stuck by that last phrase. He tried to thinly veil his mitigation. What does that mean?
He made very last-minute attempts to thinly veil his conduct in an effort to mitigate it, that his 11th-hour efforts to mitigate his conduct were just that, 11th-hour efforts that demonstrate that he truly doesn't understand the wrongfulness of his conduct. And this hearing was originally actually set for September 24th. He didn't make any efforts to go to OLAP, pay back restitution, or do any of those things prior to that date. He waited until days before the continued hearing date of December 16th.
And who asked for the continuance?
I don't know. I was on maternity leave, so I'm not quite sure who asked for that continuance, but I know that it was granted.
It should be in the record.
It's not in the transcript as to why that hearing was continued. It was actually never discussed that the hearing was continued from that date.
Well, not to argue about semantics, but from your answer, I think you're saying that he didn't get serious about mitigation until late in the game.
Correct. Just like he
did. I wouldn't call that he tried to thinly veil his mitigation. He was just late to the altar.
It's a further demonstration of respondent really not recognizing how significant his misconduct was. He, through the two-year investigation that was pending, he failed to appear at two depositions that he was personally served with, subpoenas for. We rescheduled three different depositions at his request at most 24 hours in advance of the deposition. And he failed to respond to 14 different letters requesting information from him. He actually testified that he didn't believe that this was even serious until after the pretrial conference, after a complaint was filed against him. He had had two attorneys during the pendency of the investigation trying to assist him and trying to help him recognize how important it really was, and he just further demonstrated that he doesn't understand how wrong his conduct was. My second reason why I feel like this court should reject the board's recommended sanction is they erroneously relied on the Coleman case in making their sanction recommendation. They would like you to believe, and respondent would like you to believe, that respondent's conduct and Coleman's conduct are essentially mirror images of each other because the amount of money that was misappropriated is the same. However, that's really where the consistencies stop. Coleman had one client, and this money affected one client. He opened his IOLTA account specifically to handle funds from that client. He misappropriated the money during a time where he was the sole caretaker of his daughter and two nephews, and the panel and the board gave some mitigating credit for those extenuating circumstances. In addition, Coleman fully cooperated throughout the process and paid back the restitution within weeks of the complaint being filed against him. In this case, respondent's conduct goes much deeper than just misappropriating client funds and a handful of IOLTA violations. Respondent's IOLTA violations were pervasive. He had three overdrafts, and he used his IOLTA account as a checking account and wrote at least 85 personal checks out of his IOLTA account. He also failed to cooperate, and there was no such mitigating circumstances for any extenuating circumstances that might have been happening and occurring in respondent's life at the time of his misconduct.
Wasn't there a lot of testimony, though, about his personal problems with respect to the marriage and the children, et cetera?
There was, but the panel specifically stated that they did not give any mitigating credit for those circumstances. Finally, The respondent lied to the panel at the hearing and should not get credit for a state suspension. He testified that the $88,000 deposit was an inheritance. And like I stated, when he was questioned numerous times by one of the panel members, he finally admitted that that was an executor fee, which is income and subject to division in any divorce proceeding. He testified that he borrowed money from Torok, which is a lie. He stole her money. And he testified that he began going back to counseling in 2014 after the grievance was filed against him. In fact, the exhibit the respondent submitted regarding his counseling, the last logged appointment with his therapist was in August of 2013. I see that my time is up.
Thank you. Ms. Laszlo?
Good morning. Madam Chief Justice and your honors, it is my pleasure to be here today and to represent Attorney Ben Jolton. If I could, I would just like to state that this is a case of misappropriation and commingling of client funds. However, I believe that the paramount difference between what Attorney Russo has stated and the Coleman case is that the trial panel found that there was no harm to the clients in each one of the respondents' cases. And that, I believe, is where this court comes into place when you look historically at the cases that you have looked at in juggling the aggravation and mitigation between clients and attorneys who have had misconduct with their aggravating and mitigating circumstances. In the Coleman case, the court found that the trial panel found that there was misappropriated client funds of $18,000. This was a case in which an attorney had $18,000 placed into his personal account. He assured that client that it was put into his trust account when it was not. He also failed to maintain records, he failed to reconcile monthly records, and he was found to be dishonest and misrepresented the client. His aggravating circumstances was that he was dishonest and that he had a selfish motive, and that he had financial harm to the client. Rather than advance that client's position and earn him money on those investments, he was instead spending those funds. Unlike in the respondent's case, Attorney Jolton was found by the trial panel that he did advance his client's cases and that he did no harm to those clients. In the matter of Torok, there was a highly contested, contentious divorce case in which he was able to advance her case and was able to provide her with a settlement, and she was able to go forward with her life. She was also repaid all of her funds. In also in Coleman, there was a one-day attorney registration suspension, and the respondent has no prior incidences. Also in Coleman, there was a vulnerable client because that client was incarcerated and was unable to look after his affairs, whereas each one of Ben Jolton's clients were able to look after their affairs and were able to communicate with him. In mitigation, it was found that there was full disclosure. Attorney Jolton did not have full disclosure in this case. He did provide full disclosure. He did not fully cooperate with the disciplinary counsel. He was found to have good character, and the reason I believe that the court found that the trial panel put so much emphasis on the fact that he had a good reputation was because of the 17 letters that were provided were from a variety of different attorneys. They were from different counties, and they were from different genres of cases,
When those letters were received, did they say, we know all of the details of the discipline action pending, and we still say this about him?
Yes, they did. Attorney Jolton wrote a letter to each and every personalized.
Is that contained in the file? His letter to them disclosing the extent of his charges and wrongdoing?
That letter is not, Your Honor, but if you read the letters that were provided to the court, it goes through that he did list and that he did admit to the wrongdoing, just as he admitted in the stipulations, that some of those letters list that even though he has misappropriated and commingled funds, that that's why the court took so much weight and put it to those letters, is because he did provide that to each and every one of the attorneys who wrote those letters, and that those letters still then went into such detail. They went into the detail that he had professional competence, that he had attention to detail, and that he had been a zealous advocate for his clients. Also that he had a reputation for truth and veracity in the community, and that his courteous behavior was in and out of court. And the trial panel enumerated each and every one of those based on those letters.
Did any of those letters go into personal reasons why this had occurred, why this may have been a one-time situation as opposed to something that would recur?
Yes, I believe that some of those letters went into detail because he had confided in some of those as personal colleagues of the turmoil that he had gone through during that time and period in his life, that he had been going through a divorce, that he was very reluctant to leave the marriage, even though the marriage had been over for years because of the children involved in that marriage. The counsel would prefer to rely on McCauley. And in McCauley, there was a joint proposal in that case for an indefinite suspension that both counsel for the relator as well as the respondent agreed that there should be an indefinite suspension. And in that case, there was client harm, and the client actually had to sue the attorney. That client collected more than $400,000 in collection fees and then did not pay those fees that were earned by the client were not paid directly to the client. And instead, he kept retaining those fees. I believe that the trial panel and what was approved by the board found that in this case that there was no harm to the clients, and that if this court goes on, as they have in other cases, to protect the public, that Attorney Jolton is not a threat to the public, that this was inadvertence. His testimony in regards to his financial information, the fact that he only had an IOLTA account, that he didn't have an operating account, that he didn't have any credit cards, he lacked complete financial management within his office. And now with the addition of a mentor to his firm, he is now able to do all of those. That if he
is he currently being mentored?
He is, Your Honor. He is being mentored by attorney Kurt Bogan from Warren, Ohio.
All right. So the statement that your colleague has made that monitoring would not protect the public in this particular case, what about the issue of his delay in going to OLAP when this action was going on?
Your Honor, he had gone to personal counseling, started in 2012 when all of his turmoil and problems initiated. And then when he did finally look at this case and say, I have done something wrong, he had fully admitted. At that point, we went through stipulations. The continuance that was requested of this court was done between a joint continuance between both I and Attorney Sheets from the Disciplinary Council. Attorney Russo was on maternity leave, and both he and I were fairly new to the case. Attorney Jolton has gone to OLAP at this point in time, has signed a 3-year contract, and is working through that program.
Was the monitor appointed by disciplinary counsel?
It was not, Your Honor. He voluntarily looked for a monitor and found Attorney Bogan in this area. He does primarily what Attorney Jolton does. He has a very busy practice. He is a sole practitioner, and mainly their referral basis from word of mouth, which is...
There was some suggestion that the IOLT account had been used more than 80 times in a 14-month period for personal checks. Has that been verified?
Yes, Your Honor, that has been verified. And the reason that is because it was the only account that he used. He used it as an operating account. He used it as an IOLT account. He used it as the one and only account that he had in his office. His complete lack of knowledge and financial background in both accounting was fleshed out by the trial panel when they requested his background in financial management, and there was none. He had absolutely no practice whatsoever, and that's why he stopped keeping records at one point in time, because his practice became so busy that he was unable to balance both his professional life in both practicing in a courtroom and his office management, let alone his personal life. So those three became his downfall all at once.
Is Mr. Bogan a certified public accountant?
He is not, Your Honor. Not to my knowledge, he is not. The reason that he sought out Attorney Bogan is because, again, he is highly recognized in his community. He has basically the same practice, and that he offered his services once Attorney Jolton requested those services. Attorney Jolton has also not only done the OLAP and the mentoring program, but he has also provided continuing legal education, and that he will continue to do so, specifically in office management. And I would ask that this court follow the trial court, who heard and held that there was no harm, and thereby protecting the public, if you follow Coleman, which was laid out in the trial panel's decision, that they were able to differentiate Coleman versus Edwards, which I had requested the trial panel to look at. And if you look at the differences between Coleman, Edwards, as well as McCauley, I believe that the trial panel, and as held by the board, that Coleman is the closest case, and that we would ask you to follow those decisions. Thank you.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to briefly address the issue of why monitoring the respondent in this case will not prove effective. His own testimony demonstrated that he had a mentor in his office from 2004 to 2012. He stopped maintaining IOLTA records while having that mentor in 2008. Respondent's also a solo practitioner, so there's very little oversight in day-to-day activities.
Well, a mentor is different than a monitor.
I believe that Mr. Bogan was actually secured as a mentor initially, and it was suggested that we appoint him as a monitor in this case.
Well, those are remarkably different roles.
You're correct. And he has not been approved as a monitor. He was just as a mentor at the time that respondent asked him to work with him as a mentor. He also did not provide any documentary evidence at the hearing regarding his IOLTA compliance. The panel relied on his own testimony showing that he's maintaining IOLTA records. He's not provided the Office of Disciplinary Counsel with any records demonstrating that he's in compliance. He also testified that his secretary still has to consistently remind him to keep his IOLTA records. For all these reasons, we ask that you reject the board's recommended sanction and instead impose a 2-year actual suspension. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.